Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
film
conversation.
Hooray!
Yeah, hooray. Right, guys, we're here once again to talk about a film, and this week's film is, I was going to say Run, Fat Boy, Run, but that is not the film. The film is Walk, Don't Run. Walk, Don't Run is this week's film, and it was Anthony's pick, and therefore we'll give it to him to tell us who's in it, aka reading out IMDb.
Yeah, sure. Walk, Don't Run was filmed during the Olympic Games of 1964 in Tokyo, released in cinemas on the 29th of June 1966, so this is somewhat topical, by Columbia Pictures. Directed by Charles Walters, famed for his many musical films such as Easter Parade, The Barclays of Berkeley, and The Unsinkable Molly Brown. The film stars Hollywood legend Cary Grant as Sir William Rutland, a British businessman on a business trip to Tokyo during the Olympic Games of 1964. Due to a shortage of places to stay because of said games, he ends up sharing a small apartment with Christine, played by Samantha Eager, and Olympian Steve, played by Jim Hutton. Sir William, or Bill to his friends, soon finds himself playing Cupid to the younger pair, despite Christine already being engaged to Julius Havasak, played by John Standing. Also, look out for a small cameo by Star Trek's own George Takei.
Yeah, very well
Can I just
done.
point out, plays Cupid for no reason at all? They left that very important plot point out of their summary.
Yeah.
He's an eccentric British person. It's what they do.
They meddle. It's what old people do. They get to a certain age, they're bitter about their own marriages, and they want to get everyone else married as fast as possible. So that's what I put it
Oh,
down
we're
to.
getting married. I'm getting ahead of myself already here.
Excited. You're fast out the gate there, Jamie, but I think it was an illegal start, so back in the thing. Sports, these sports metaphors. And they said I didn't know nothing about sports. Do they have gates in races with humans? I don't think so.
Depends on the country, I think.
You mean the blocks?
Back to your starter's block, yeah. Jumping the gun.
Okay.
There we go. Now I've done a sports analogy, I think.
Well done.
Thanks. Anthony, what was your reasoning for this particular film?
Well, I wanted to pick a film which was like the last of an actor or a director. So I threw a few out there, and this is the one that seemed to have stuck.
Whose swan song is it?
That would be Mr. Cary Grant's swan song.
And what a song to finish your career off in film. I mean,
Yeah. What a
truly
terrible
his
song.
greatest film.
It's really weird because I'm really used to him being like the leading man, if you will. But in this, towards the end, he seems to like become one of the supporting acts of the film.
Well, I think that's why because he retired after this, and the reason was he realized he could no longer be a leading man because he was too old, and he didn't think audiences would accept it, so he just decided to retire. I don't know if that's true or whether he thought his ego wouldn't be able to accept it and decided to retire. I don't know, but I think that I read that somewhere when I was reading up about this film and trying to find out why it was made.
All right.
It
I
was a
also read
remake as well of an older film.
called
Yes,
Run, Don't Walk, surely.
the more the merrier.
The more the merrier. Which won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor? Surely you'd think like one of the first criteria for remakes is, was the first film any good and did anyone notice? And surely like winning an Oscar is like a big X next to the film if you won a
Not
remake.
necessarily, I don't think.
Oh, it should be.
Because I know there were rumors of The Exorcist being remade floating around, and I was physically sick when I read that.
Did your
The thing
head
with
spin
that
round and
though
vomit
is,
when you vomited?
yes,
they remade the film without actually referencing the film at all.
I think that was more of a done thing back in the older days of cinema, where people were a bit more free and easy with, readapting stories and stuff. They just did it without really acknowledging where it had come from.
Plus, how many horrors haven't been remade anyway? They just take it as read that, oh, we'll just make it again, make it rubbish, and have lots more gore in it.
Hang on. Did you watch the same Walk, Don't Run?
By gore, he means meddling and illogic.
Yeah, okay. It was, I mean, it was pretty horrific, but I wouldn't say there was gore.
No. So expectations, if they're not being implied already, going in.
That said, he does mercilessly kill those eggs.
Kill what? What does he kill?
Yeah, with an ironing board.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
It was, in fact, the highlight of the film.
But... It was.
Yeah, sure. Eggs being smashed by an ironing board. Cracking. Oh, gosh. I didn't mean to make that pun. Oh.
That's the beauty of it.
So, had anyone seen this beforehand?
No.
Were we all... I can't ask us all at the same time. So, Anthony, what were you thinking? I mean, you picked this, but you had a few options when it comes to actors' last films, and it's just so happened we all went for this one. Well, not, you know, I'm showing behind the curtain here, but we basically have a few options that we voted for, and the majority came down on this one. So, what were you thinking, Anthony?
Yeah, that surprised me a little. I wasn't thinking this would be the film that all of you guys would have picked, but anywho, there it is. Yeah, I'm fairly familiar with Cary Grant. I've seen like a lot of his films, and what I like about him is he's always this kind of like not posh, kind of like debonair kind of. He's got that kind of James Bond flair, but then he's got the kind of comic, kind of human side about him too.
Hmm.
Which always like seems to come out in his performance. So his films are, if not really good, then pretty harmless. So I was going into this with middling expectations, I suppose.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting a masterpiece, but then it is Cary Grant, and I was kind of expecting something fairly light and unassuming, I suppose.
Hmm.
Sure. Would you agree with that sentiment, Abigail?
Yeah, pretty much. Cary Grant doesn't really have the reputation of making things that are fundamentally terrible. So I assumed, well, this will probably be fine or better.
Sure. We're all sort of implying that it wasn't a good film. And I've pretty much outright spoiled the fact that we didn't get on with it for the most part. But I would say, as far as Cary Grant goes, you know, I expected it to be fine. A little dated, obviously, but I was looking forward to the fact that it was an American-ish movie that would be set in Japan, and not just, like, actually filmed there for some of it. Or at least they had some footage from the Olympics in Japan. I mean, I imagine they did lots of it on set, but, you know.
Really, though? Surely you should have been expecting, like, from a 1960s Hollywood comedy set in another country, there'll be a little bit of racism.
But that's you know, that could have been fun in and of itself. It mostly, for the best part of the film, it avoided that. At the start, it sort of has this bit where there's a joke about all the Japanese blokes nodding, and the nodding going on for ages, and you think, oh, it's not going to be this kind of thing all the way through, is it?
Yeah, I remember that moment. It was kind of like a slap to the head of God. Oh, no, they're going to do this all the way through, aren't they?
But they don't, really.
Yeah, luckily that's pretty much it. That's as far as it goes.
Yeah, it's more incidental that it's set during the Japanese Olympics, really.
Mm.
Jamie, I mean, what did you think before you saw this? Before, remember before?
Yeah, I know. I don't think I've ever actually sat and watched a film with Cary Grant in it. I know who he is, and I know him, like, the stuff he's most famous for. So in my head, he's just, like, you know, dashing old school leading man.
Hmm.
When I read a little bit about this film. I didn't watch any trailers, but it looked like the kind of thing that would be on, like, ITV on a Sunday afternoon or a bank holiday back in the early 90s, when I would have been about, like, 7, and I'd be kind of falling asleep, not really wanting to watch it, but it was something one of my grandparents would have seen once and thought, oh, yeah, put that on. And because of, like, ad breaks, it's on for about 4.5 hours.
Yeah.
and just
incredibly specific.
I totally agree, though. I totally agree. It would just be on in your grandparents' house, and everyone would be sort of half ignoring it, and then occasionally chuckling at the awful comedy.
And like, it's one of those films that just expands into the horizon of a Saturday or Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
So I was expecting it to not be gripping, but not quite as weirdly bad as it actually turned out to be.
Okay. So to tackle the plot and the story, which I'm pretty sure is the same thing, talking about what happens and why we think it happened and what we thought. So I guess it begins with our leading man, or one of our leading men, Cary Grant, turning up in Japan and trying to get a hotel. But it's the Olympics, don't you know? So you can't get a hotel for love, but you can get one for money. And if by hotel you mean a woman's apartment. That's kind of the setup, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the first thing he does is go to the British Embassy when he's turned down at the hotel. Not to, like, another hotel. Is that the normal thing you do when you turn up? You go to your own embassy and complain?
Only if you've been knighted, which he has, I guess.
Yeah, I think he has special treatment. If he goes to the embassy, they'll go, oh, yeah, we'll kick someone out of their room and shove you in there. Don't worry.
Yeah, when he was knighted, he got this special card that means he's allowed to go into the embassy and go, help me!
Yeah, yeah. Especially if it's like a hotel full of Japanese people, and like, just kick one of them out. You're British. You can go straight in there.
Yeah. But the guy at the embassy is a bit of an ass and treats him badly. And that's some nice foreshadowing for later on. There's a bit of a, you know, that it's relevant. We don't realise at the time, but that character is going to come up again. And then he finds out he is a sir and then treats him like a million times better. And by that point, Cary Grant has lost interest and has spotted an ad in the corridor for a woman who's willing to let out her apartment. And that's where we spend the bulk of the movie, it's centered around this apartment, which slightly uninteresting comedy ensues as easily avoidable awkward situations.
The thing
occur.
Is, when it got to that point where he like moved himself in, and I like the way he insisted himself upon that apartment. That part of the film, I started to think, yeah, this might not actually be too bad, because Cary Grant was like, he's not bad in this at all.
Yeah, he's very likable.
Yeah, and he seems to do comedy quite well, and there's a lot of like physical comedy involved, and there's the whole thing about arranging, you know, who goes to the bathroom and when and all that, and all the stuff that they're doing, and she's good as well, and all the stuff that they're doing, like swapping back and forth, and he's trying to get a handle on what the hell she's doing. And his, you know, his fight with the ironing board where he smashes the eggs and trying to make the coffee at the same time as going back and forth to the bathroom. All of that was timed well enough that it was interesting to watch. And it was like quite funny in a, you know, 60s comedy kind of way.
Yeah, it's very much light farce, isn't it?
Yeah. And I thought, if that's the way this film's going to go, then I can probably, you know, get on board with this.
Sure.
And then the bottom fell out from under me and it all went to hell.
I don't know. I think the alarm bells went off for me when they started foreshadowing the later jokes about the bathroom mix-up. It was kind of like they're doing this. The first thing they kind of get into trouble with, I mean, like you say, Cary Grant forces himself in and there's an element of comedy. Do other guys agree that it was kind of good at the point where he was just sort of being assertive and forcing his way into her apartment despite the fact that she was like, no thanks.
Yeah, that was fine. That's exactly kind of what the kind of thing I was expecting coming into the film, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that seemed fine. The problem was, it's like when they did the joke again later. Yeah.
And again.
Much worse.
Yeah, there's, it seems the writer or writers, I'm not sure, was it just one writer or? The writers seem to think it's hilariously funny trying to watch two people trying to use the washroom at the same time, and that a lot of hilarity will ensue if the woman's very particular about what times you can and can't use the bathroom, and it could all so easily be avoided if Cary Grant just goes, oh, you're done at 7:42, I'll just go in after that, Maybe I'll make breakfast while you're doing
Yeah, because he's clearly not in a rush himself, is he?
Yeah. So it's just the stupid going in at different times, not having enough time to shave or shower, is just unnecessary.
I think it's the fact that it, like, when it happens initially, it's quite funny.
Oh,
but
no.
Then it just... no, I could, like, give it a chance, but then it keeps happening. And it's like, okay, maybe they're thinking, you know, rule of three, but not rule of, like, nine. That's...
I don't know, it just... For me, it was so obvious it was going to come up again later. They were setting it up as like, this is going to be something that reoccurs and is a problem.
What
and
I didn't like was that it reoccurs again. Like, they introduce another character and then they go, let's do that again.
Yeah. But, yeah, so basically, once Cary Grant is settled in this apartment, they split in the rent. It's all fine. He's got business to do. She's got work to go to. Surely a rom-com or whatever it is could just pass...
There's a weird little kind of like suggestion or potential plot point that comes up here that then doesn't really go anywhere, where he goes off to his business meeting or whatever he has to do. And he keeps talking about how, I think it happens just before when her friend turns up as well to give her a ride to work and sees him there. And like the friend assumes he's like an older relative, he gets all insulted. And then when he says to the Japanese businessman that he's staying with the girl, and the guy's like not interested because he clearly thinks, oh well, you're too old, it can't be anything untoward, he gets all offended again. And that seems to be like, oh, is this going to become a driver? And then it never comes up again. Like he just thinks, oh well, because I'm too old, I'll just set her up with this guy I just met outside by the fountain.
Yeah, I like that joke though. It's kind of a nice thing that
it had gone anywhere.
Yeah, it was those were quite good jokes. But like, I think what I also liked was whenever Cary Grant was kind of told something or told off or whatever, he'd usually reiterate his telling off to someone else. Like, he gets told about the Olympics so much that he starts telling people about the Olympics, and just there were lots of times where he'd be told something, and then. And criticised, and then he'd criticise someone else himself in that lovely, hypocritical way.
Yeah, he does it to, I can't remember the character's name, Steve, when he's like, he starts going through the routine like she did, like Chris did with him, and he starts doing it to Steve. And I, again, that was another joke that I thought, okay, this maybe they're picking the ball back up here, but no.
They did that more, perhaps, but there were some nice little things in there. It wasn't just all, what is this humour? But what kind of starts the ball rolling in the I'm going to meddle in people's lives court, if you will, is Cary Grant notices there's a guy taking pictures outside, and that incident...
It's outside the factory that he kind of stake in. And,
that's right.
Yeah, he's with the owner and they're taking pictures. And
it all gets a little bit confusing. And what's weird, right? They introduce Steve, the third main character... And he is a complete, like, git about it. He doesn't answer any questions straightforwardly, does he?
Yeah. It's just like, oh, I'm going to maybe get myself in trouble here for no reason. Yeah. I'm not going to give anybody a straight answer or tell anyone what I'm doing or who I am. Maybe I am a spy. Don't say that. What's the matter with you?
Yeah. You're only trespassing, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So Cary Grant decides to stalk him.
He does. Yeah. After Steve wins him over by being a complete idiot and being absolutely a pain, like, Cary Grant's like, do you know what? I'm bored enough to, like, just sort of stalk and chat up this man for a bit.
I've got nothing better to do, so hey, have you got anywhere to live? No. Okay, well, come back to my apartment and marry my housemate.
Yeah, yeah. In a nutshell, that is it.
Just met.
Not before we go to an authentic Japanese bathhouse.
Yeah, I'd like to see you naked first before I work out whether you're good enough for this woman I don't know.
It is a really weird scene as well, because it seems like Cary Grant is kind of flirting with Steve unnecessarily, because he's the most antisocial person he meets all trip, and he's like, I've got to get in here. And they go to the bathhouse and get washed by Japanese ladies while Cary Grant smokes a cigar and have a further chat, and then they go and... Swim with naked men? Not swim, but sit in the baths with
the
naked
Japanese men. The best bit of that was, like, I think at that point it had already been set up that Steve was in the Olympics. So he's an athlete. and yet is extremely bashful about being in any way naked or exposed around other men.
Yeah.
Like, he keeps his towels on and jumps in so he doesn't have to strip off. It's like, what? Like, are you one of those guys, do you keep your T-shirt on in the showers after, you know, whatever event you've done?
He has some bad issues about being flicked with a towel in previous Olympics.
He has 14 nipples.
Oh. Oh dear, he's going to catwalk his way through the film. Oh, I'm sorry. Right, well, so, yeah, that's kind of the way that Steve is injected into the story. It's kind of odd. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Why?
He's just kind of hammered in, like he doesn't fit.
He just
reminded me of something.
Go on.
The way you described that they went to a bathhouse and Cary Grant was smoking a cigar and everything, I'm sure I've seen that in more than one gangster movie, where you're just talking to one of the upper guys in a sauna smoking a cigar.
I can only think of Back to the Future Part 2 with Biff in the pool with the two girls.
I can't think of anything worse to do in a sauna than smoke a cigar.
Did you like cigars?
No.
Then there we go. We could be.
But it's hard enough to breathe in there as it is.
It's horrible trying to breathe in a sauna.
Sorry, Ab?
I agree with Anthony. It's horrible trying to breathe in a sauna.
And a cigar is not going to help, sure. But so they hammer the square peg in the round hole that is Steve into this contrived plot. And the farcical thing that happens that you're all meant to have a little smile and laugh at is obviously Cary Grant sharing half the apartment with Christine. So he then, rather slyly, well, not he doesn't mean to, but he gets into the position where he's splitting his half of the already halved room. No, wait, the already halved apartment with Steve. Have I said that right?
Yeah, it's about as clear as the film is about it. Yeah.
I love how he's only been about 24 hours in Tokyo, and he's already illegally subletting twice over.
It can't be too illegal. It was advertised in the embassy, so plus the Olympics were on. We've all got to band together.
I mean, his room was advertised at the agency, but the subletting wasn't.
Yeah, but you know, it was you know, fair enough. Oh, I need somewhere to stay. Oh, you have two couches in here. Oh, I might just stay here. Good job. Yeah, so that's kind of the crux of the film, is this idea that the apartment is being shared three ways, and that isn't enough for Cary Grant. Not only does he want to share the apartment, but he wants to force a marriage to happen.
Yeah, asking loads of awkward questions about marriage and, you know, washing machines or something. I don't even know where that was going.
Yeah, what's really odd is when they all sit down and Christine is kind of reconciled over the fact that she's kind of been conned into sharing an apartment, is the Cary Grant does all the talking for Steve and does all the telling her about him while he just sits there not really saying anything.
He's so disinterested, and Cary Grant is trying so hard to please be interested in this woman, please. I know she's, and then she admits she's already engaged, and Cary Grant's like, ah, oh, tough guy, eh?
Yeah, totally. It is mad. What do you guys make of the two characters that are trying to be romanced together by force?
I think that there's nothing wrong with them on an individual basis, but there's no chemistry between them at all.
Yeah.
Well, I would say there are some problems with them, especially Christine, because she's so particular and so, like, she's a fuddy-duddy and a stick in the mud at first. She's very particular and she doesn't seem interested in doing anything exciting. So I would
but
say
if
she's
this was
bad.
A different movie, then she just meets some kind of, not bum exactly, but someone like James Franco used to be in films, and he'd change her a bit and she'd change him a bit and it would be good.
But Cary Grant has to change them, is the problem with this. Yeah.
Steve is so, like, no, like, I can't remember anything about him now other than his silly walk in at the end of the film. And his tiny shorts.
And he's ashamed of the fact that he's a walk racer.
That's the other thing as well, when they keep the running joke, which goes nowhere, where they keep asking him, what event do you do? What are you doing? And like, it's never developed. It's never explained why exactly he's ashamed of it, apart from it looks ridiculous.
Plus, I spotted an irony there. His walking is a running joke.
I don't think they were that clever.
But also, the title is Walk, Don't Run. It's not going to be like shot put that he does, is it?
Like, well, if you wanted to, you know, throw a curveball at the audience.
Or not a curveball, a big heavy shot put ball at the audience.
Or just walk at them really quickly, but not running.
Oh, just what are they doing with that? It's not even funny when, like, it is a bit embarrassing to be like, if you've got an event in the Olympics, if you're like a dude who walks as fast as he can, it's like an endurance thing. I mean, it's not the best event, but it's certainly not like, I mean, who's going to mock you for being in the Olympics no matter what? Like, fair play to you.
That was the most annoying thing about this movie for me, was that he was ashamed to be in the Olympics. Like, no. I would do any event if it meant I could be in the Olympics once.
I'd clean afterwards, you know. That would do me.
I'd like to see some of you guys, because you guys aren't particularly good at sport. So if you were at the Olympics, it would be a pretty diabolical like, team we'd have going in. Oh, dear.
Team Wales.
Right, so where were we in the film? Steve's moved in. They've had an awkward forcing together of personalities, and it's not going great because she's engaged.
But at this point, I was still with the film. Like, I could see it building some kind of potential, and then they introduced Havisac,
which was the guy
at the embassy. Yeah, and it turns out that like Cary Grant and Rutland and Steve have both Steve hasn't met him, but Rutland has, decides he hates him and is going to ruin his engagement by crowbarring Steve into the middle of them. And then the film just takes a nosedive, because it just gets kind of like, it stays light, but that plot is quite sinister.
It is.
Why are you doing this? What's wrong with you, you mad old man?
When someone says they're engaged, just go, oh, it's a shame. Like, are you done with it?
You two could have been great together. Oh, well.
And it's literally, he finds a stranger, not his best friend. Yeah. It's like, he's the wingman for Steve, and what a wingman. Like, he goes above and beyond the duty of any wingman by taking metaphorical bullets left and right everywhere.
Yeah. Considering what he has to put up with, you know, being locked out of the apartment, climbing up the outside, being locked out again and having to climb up the outside again, because that's how humour works.
Oh, yeah, that's the amazing second awkward bathroom scene combined with can't sort out breakfast because I keep being locked out because the milk's out there thing. That was weird. And the trousers farce as well.
With the boing sound effects when they fly out. So,
Avi, am I right in thinking you were particularly unamused by the trousers gag?
I think it's because they didn't commit. Like, when it boinged outside and it was caught by that Japanese woman, I thought, they're really going to town with this. This is going to go somewhere mad. And they didn't...
Go a bit Mr. Bean or something. But instead
just
it's just...
Back.
Yeah.
I was a little confused by it myself. I didn't quite understand what was going on until, like...
You're confused because other trousers kept turning up.
Yes.
And it wasn't made clear whose they were. And who was
looking for waft and stuff, It was totally confusing for me.
And, like, he tells him to make his bed, and then he makes the sheets over a pair of trousers.
For
and
no
it's,
reason.
Like, it's focused on as if to say, uh-oh, there they are, and then that's it. Like,
yeah. There's two trousers, and one goes out the window, the other one gets wrapped in a bed when it's made, and that seems to cause a lot of problems, as well as a pint of milk that can't be fetched because doors have to be slammed instantly behind the person who's clearly out there and is coming back in a second.
Yeah.
There's also a couple of kid actors who are employed a lot to be just two little kids are always sitting about watching Cary Grant have his horrible
Where
trip.
Are their parents? Are they locked out too?
Who knows? These kids are maybe demons, you're thinking?
Yeah, they're orchestrating all of this.
Nah, they're cute. I like them.
Yeah, the kids who never speak were the most likable characters at this point.
What can you do wrong when you've just got, you know, two cute kids sitting on some stairs? I mean, you're just instantly going to be endeared to anything that happens, no matter how pointless, stupid, or dull. But a bit of bedroom farce goes on, you know, breakfast time shenanigans, climbing up the outside of the building unnecessarily, and they're not picking the best way in. Like when Cary Grant climbs the outside instead of just knocking the door really hard. Because he's trapped outside, you know, outside the apartment. He doesn't go in through his window or onto the easily accessible balcony. Oh no, he's going to go in her bedroom and disturb a single woman in her own room.
This is what I mean. This at this point in the film, there emerges this weirdly sinister streak.
Yeah, it's odd.
Well, the next like real thing that happens is they all attend a kind of Olympics-based party.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the athletes and a couple of managers going to just a little dinner.
Where the movie just kind of steps towards the racism again, but not too far, and comes back pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's just has a weird thing where the Japanese band is play a bunch of different themes, like, that are to do with each country, and they all sort of dance
together. Russian music? Hey, what? and then the fat woman dances in front of Cary Grant, and he does have quite the only laugh. I think it was the last time I laughed in the film in any way, like internally a little bit, was when he said, what does she do? And she's like the Slovenian shot putter or something, and he taps her on the ass and says, can you put your shot over there, please? And I thought this film has melted so severely at this point that got a laugh out of me. I was thinking, oh no, this is not going well anymore.
Yeah.
Also, that reminds me of like Steve's weird Russian friend that always keeps popping up.
Yeah. Is he a spy? Who knows? Because it's all kind of odd and confusing, and something about toothpaste and fertilizer.
No. Don't confuse Steve's friend with Steve's weird ramblings about being a spy. Steve's friend is perfectly normal. He's one of the few normal characters in this. He's clearly there to be in the Olympics. He turns up to do his sport, but he's being pursued by a weird and an inept Russian spy who's checking in on him. Or maybe not a spy, but someone who's trying to investigate to make sure that the Russian guy or whatever isn't up to anything. And he's not, because it's the Olympics and he's just there for that. But he seems to be a problem that affects the relationship of everyone else. And so it's that weird thing that they keep having to have Steve's friend in it so that they have this plot point about the Russian guy who's trying to meddle with... or just investigate, you know, why... what I don't know why he's expecting to go on.
Yeah, this is what I mean. Like, I can't remember it going anywhere. Like, even when it gets to the point where they're all crowded together and trying to work out who lives where, the Russian guy is there, and they all kind of blather on about, like, spies and stuff, and then that's it. They all leave, and there's no follow-up. But that's the problem I have towards later in the film, the fact that there's no conclusion to the film. It just stops.
Ah, no, no, Jamie. It has... that is relevant, because at a key stage where Steve and Christine are starting to get on with each other, weirdly... they start getting on with each other after they have a bit of a row. Basically, the party goes fine. They're back at the apartment. And then Christine goes to bed. It's all been fine. And then Cary Grant and Steve ruin it. I can't remember Cary Grant's name. What's his name?
Rutland.
Bill.
That's
Bill
it.
Rutland. They're having a nice chat, trying to figure out Christine. And they sort of imply stuff that I don't quite follow.
A nice chat.
Yeah.
It was like the rudest thing ever.
They basically talk about whether or not she's, hey, whoa. And like that's how it's approached, though. And they do stuff that makes noises over that while they talk about, you know, all sorts.
They imply stuff. They imply heavily. I don't know if it's things about virginity or just whether she'll put out or, you know, what kind of... not what way her toast is buttered or what, but they imply some stuff. And then what makes it worse is they just sort of look at her lingerie and judge it for a bit. And then rightly so, she comes in and says, you have to leave now. You have to leave in the morning. That you've gone too far. You've literally been talking about me.
have two creepy rapists in my apartment. Please leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you, Abby, would you think it's okay for two strange men to be, you know, doing the same thing in your kitchen, talking about
Abby,
you?
Abby, as a woman, tell us how this would make you feel.
I think the main problem here is that they were living in an apartment where the walls are made of paper.
Literally. And
what were they expecting?
Not this. It's her apartment, and they're doing this in there.
Yeah, and they've already like kind of conned her into living there. Like they've moved in and sort of forced themselves to share their apartment next door. They've really been a pain to her. So the least they could do is just be polite and nice.
Yeah.
So that would be the last straw if Cary Grant didn't meddle some more via recording a message. That he leaves in the morning. He leaves behind because he sort of works in technology in some way.
Yeah, he does something,
yeah. And he records a message saying sorry and then starts talking about Steve some more. And then that gets Christine and Steve talking somehow. And
like her response to the fake message is basically to immediately and for no reason at all fall completely in love with Steve. Like that's it. That's of course the natural response. And then suddenly she's like wanting to hang out with him and taking the phone off the hook so that Rutland can't call. So oh no, he's not going to turn up. Looks like we'll have to go out together. Have you completely forgotten what happened last night? Like six hours ago?
Like, he hasn't really even said sorry. Like, Rutland has said sorry and then started talking about Steve, and then Steve just breaks the thing or whatever, so she can't listen to it anymore. Like, and it's just, you've got amnesia now. What? They were deeply offensive and horrible, and now Steve's a dreamboat because he kind of stood there awkwardly and went, it is a bit weird for me to go to another apartment now. I may as well stay. They'll be gone tomorrow, you know? Ah, just, what? And this is where it ties into the Russian guy again, because they do that cute thing where they both clearly want to go on a date together, but she can't because, you know, her fiancé will phone and say, let's go out ourselves. And so she secretly takes the phone off the hook. And the Russian guy ruins this by turning up at the time where the call's going to happen and starts blathering on about how he wants to know, you know, what's going on with the Russian Olympic guy. And he then discovers their phone is off the hook, ruins everything, because then Haversack and phone up. And
at just the right time.
And go on a date with his fiancé, as he should. Why wouldn't he? No big deal, really. Good job, too. It's a nice thing that they get to not ruin their engagement. But of course, it goes on, the film.
It just gets worse from here as well. Like, then what is it? Then Rutland and Steve turn up on the date, on the boat, and insist themselves upon the, you know, ostensibly happy couple.
Yeah.
And go, like, what happens? Why does Steve... Because I was really having a hard time following at this point, because it got so just rubbish. How did they end up in a Japanese family's house together where the father thought that they were together, and then Haversack had been taken off for a wonder by Rutland, because Rutland was like, I love your stories, let me hear more of your stories.
You know,
that was the original plan. That's where they were both going after like the boat ride. Because it was her friend who kept like turning up at the apartment.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, I remember. And still nobody seems to raise any alarm bells or anything?
Well, the thing is, it's not... Steve is slightly innocent in this, because it's, once again, Cary Grant finds out that Steve has not gone on a date. I mean, I don't know what he was expecting, but basically Steve meets up with Cary Grant because they can't, you know, go on a date now or whatever. So, and then Cary Grant's like, I've had an idea. I'll totally take you on a boat and happen to come across the non-loving couple that we're going to wreck the relationship off. And so once again, it's down to Cary Grant's manipulating that they happen to go on this journey together on the ferry to the friend of Christine, as you've explained. And it's just, once again, the ultimate wingman that he is. Rutland is deciding, I'm now going to chat up Haversack
Yeah, because his flirting with Steve went so well. Then
he's gonna listen to him about his stupid book ideas and Havasak's like, oh, he's a sir and he's interested, therefore I'll suddenly be nice and talk for ages and be willing to let my girlfriend go off with this strange man for ages.
Yeah,
they don't really, for me, they didn't really sell like Havasak as kind of like a bad guy enough.
No, he was a bit like snotty at the start, but he never really does anything. I think for like a Hollywood romantic comedy, they're purely relying on the fact that he's British and Steve's American, and the American guy's got to win.
And also, like, yeah, all he was being a bit, like you say, snobbish. But everyone has bad days at work. It doesn't mean he's always like that.
You don't have to ruin his marriage.
We don't know anything about him to know if he's like a boring guy or like, you know, wrong for her. He's not like he's in an abusive relationship or anything. He's a perfectly normal guy. I think he suits her more than Steve does, I think.
Yeah.
I know it's fiction, but I give Steve and Chris like a year at best.
Give them like a day. I think, well, we get to the end of the movie when we get to the end of the movie. So, sorry, what were we going to say, Ab?
That it is, no one's motivations are good enough.
No.
All the actors try really hard, but they have got nothing to work with that makes any sense.
They're never given anything. There's no logic here. Like, there's no reason at all for Rutland to want to do any of this.
No.
But Cary Grant is good enough that it at least seems like he really wants to, even if you don't understand why.
Yeah. He's definitely the most... he's the best performance in the thing. I really enjoy him.
Yeah.
But there is no motivation for it. And I guess what's weird, again, we have some light-hearted comedy that at the Japanese family's house where, you know, there's a bit of mixed misunderstandings and a running gag about TV volume, which is hilarious. It just must be the scriptwriters are like, do you know when I'm in my house, I'll turn the TV down all the time and then another kid will come in and turn it up and then someone else will come in and turn it up. Oh, it never stays down, the volume in my house. Hey, do you know what? That'd be great for our movie. Oh, let's write it in.
Observational comedy.
Yeah, I don't know. I liked the Japanese family. They were nice. I wish we'd gotten to know them a bit. I actually quite liked the flatmate. She seemed like an interesting woman. She stole Rutland's coffee and didn't really care. She could have been more interesting. She could have had more time in the film.
Than anyone else. If the film had been Cary Grant trying to win her affections, that would have been much more entertaining.
Just, I don't know, anything other than this banal, like... grandparent humor. I don't know. but anyway, from this, when they get back, what happens? Anyone want to describe the next part?
Okay, the bit in the cab.
Go on. Yeah,
they're put in the cab together and then things get really kind of creepy.
You reckon?
Because it's weird. Like, I'm sure that is not the intent, and I'm just reading this from like a modern perspective. But like, she's talking and she's talking about like her childhood and how hard it was because they moved around all the time and all this stuff. And then Steve decides, again, for no real reason, he loves her now too. And he kind of takes her hand and she gets really like, she seems to be sort of closing up and like gets really nervous. And he keeps going, like kissing her neck and getting her like wound up. And it's like, she is engaged. This is getting like, you are just forcing yourself on her now. This is getting a bit James Bond. You know, and then it's so bizarre. Like, they get back to her apartment and then they're sleeping in the separate beds, but they can hear each other through the paper wall. And they tell each other that, like, one says I love you to the other and the other says it back. And it's like, you've known, like, what is it now, 2 days? I think they've known each other.
One dubious boat trip later.
Yeah, and all they have in common is Cary Grant. And his presence in their life. Neither of them know him either.
Tell me, Mummy and Daddy, how did you guys meet? Well, we were minding our own business in Japan and a meddling British-American guy met us, put us together, and then forced us to have a relationship.
even though I was already in a relationship with someone else. Yep.
Oh, but you know, we can look back and laugh because we couldn't laugh at the time because it was kind of awkward.
Yeah, and a bit traumatic, to be honest. I don't know if I can laugh about it now, even.
Yeah, so...
years of marriage counselling later.
The other thing that Rutland does is he decides to go with Haversack back to his house and listen to more stuff about the book that he's going to write while just slyly trying to watch a little TV he has Spirited Away.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of weird.
Why did he go back to his house?
Because he wanted to make sure that Steve and Christine could go to the apartment alone, I guess, and consummate their love, it seems.
He's so confident in his abilities as Cupid in this that, oh, I know where this is going. They're barely talking to each other. This is going like, this is good. I can see fireworks now.
I wish in a way that Rutland was just a closeted gay man on holiday who wanted to to get off with Haversack himself. It was because it's just, you are really forcing yourself into like Haversack's life now. Like,
yeah.
What is your motivation? You know, it's lucky there is this reason to get two other people together. Otherwise, you are weird, man. Like,
you could have at least started setting Haversack up with somebody else.
Yeah,
you know, just to balance out his karma.
Maybe point out that there's someone who's just right for Haversack that isn't, you know, Christine or something. Yeah, that would have been a nicer way to do it instead of just ruining a relationship because you're bored on holiday. But when do we get to the point where Haversack is actually sitting outside in the corridor in the apartment? Sort of
that's towards the end.
Oh, that's
after
right.
After he's forced them to get married.
Yeah.
This is after the run.
So the run happens. That's the thing. Is the Olympics is happening. What's the contrived problem that they have at that point?
They it's discovered that they were living in the same apartment, and Haversack needs that like stricken from the record or something because it might ruin his career.
Oh, they're all pulled down to the police station, aren't they?
Yeah. Which is where George Takei turns up.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's there. All the guys talking about spies. I think the Russian friend is there. Steve's there. Chris is there. Rutland's there. Haversack is there. And they all find out that they've been living in the same apartment. And then Haversack doesn't seem too concerned. He's just like, oh, well, I need you to sign this to whatever. I don't even know.
And one of the stupidest plot points happens, and it's that he doesn't have the reaction you're expecting where, oh, here we go, everyone's going to find out all the dirty secrets, and it's all going to spill over, and there's going to be arguments. And no, Haversack's just like, oh, I've got to avoid scandal. Obviously, you guys should marry each other.
Yeah.
What? Can anyone explain why?
No.
No.
It's because like a journalist is in the background apparently, and overhears this, and then like threatens to go to the press and expose the scandal.
Yeah.
So like, but if they get married, it won't be a scandal because they're married and living together.
Just reminded me of something because you said about the idea of Cary Grant's character being this like older gay man on holiday just having a laugh himself.
Yeah.
When they're looking for they're in the seats at the Olympics and they're looking for Steve because they don't know what event he's doing. He gets out he's got a pair of binoculars and he's looking through, and there's a shot through the binoculars of him looking at one of the runners' asses, and then he goes, "That's him."
There's definitely a potential
current here.
Yeah.
There was that other thing as well where he was really miffed because he didn't get to see the women shot putters.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And you'd think of all the events a man would want to see, not the women shot putters.
And he wasn't that fond of her in the party either, so, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's quite a weird thing. And at the point where they go, actually, here's the solution. For some reason, Steve marrying Christine and then annulling the marriage is the way to avoid scandal and save the day for Haversack. Steve just goes, I don't think I will. I don't think I will sign it. I think I'll go off on Poody for no real reason.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll comply. Or like, it was the police report, wasn't it, or something? He just wouldn't do it, and he just, you know,
just
goes away.
And
that's why they have to look for him at the Olympics and figure out. And they don't know what sport he does. Oh no! Yeah, and then they find out
every time Yeah, every time he's asked, he won't admit it.
Yeah.
And then it turns out it's speed walking or whatever. And there's no, like, I guess that was meant to be, like, the big joke, but it just, it's completely flat. Like, it's just, what's his event? Oh, it's speed walking. Oh.
There we go. Oh.
Yeah.
There he is. We found him.
Found out.
Yeah. They don't take that much time to find him, really. Seeing as he could be anywhere, in any event. I mean, in any arena.
of a days long event.
Yeah. And then we have like the walking race kind of kicks off, and how do you guys know? Do you guys know anything about Olympic rules and joining in with sports? How does that work?
It's not allowed.
But even in a walking race where it's so easy to just be on the street watching and just join in, surely the walking race is the one race.
I suppose, like, you know, 50 years ago, as this nearly is. You know, there might have been slightly laxed rules about people being on the sidelines and coming in.
People in the sidelines would join in. Some people were doing the event in their car.
But, you know, there wouldn't have been as much security, so I suppose it could have happened.
Yeah.
But no, that's
really,
it's not allowed.
Are we going to discuss the realism of this film?
Let's not. Let's discuss Cary Grant stripping down to pants and a vest and a flat cap.
He forgot his kit, so he had to do it in his pants and socks.
Yeah. That's the way. When you want someone to sign a marriage certificate or whatever,
approach them in your pants.
Yeah. So Cary Grant chases him in the walking race. Luckily, it's a walking race, so it's not like...
Yeah, I like the fact that he walks him down. Like, he doesn't run to catch up with him or anything. He just tries and walks as fast as he can to catch him.
To not be inconspicuous. He doesn't want to get disqualified for joining him halfway and then running. Yeah, it is weird. Yeah, so they have a little chat, and Steve is like, "What are you doing? Like, I'm in the Olympics. This is the Olympics. I am in an Olympic race." I can't emphasize enough. This is the Olympics, and I am. This is the worst time to convince me to do anything, especially marry a woman who I was almost having an affair with, and
because of you.
Yeah, unbelievable. It is kind of funny when you think about it. I can see myself reading the script and laughing at it.
Yeah, it's funny, but I don't think in any way that people who made it intended it to be.
Yeah, not in a sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge way.
No,
it's ridiculous way.
It's funny just because it's so ludicrous.
Yeah. So how does this get resolved? Anyone?
Steve finishes and is knackered, but they force him to marry her anyway by holding him up in the church or registry office or whatever.
Ha ha.
And then
because that marriage rape, what's that?
Do they get it? Yeah, they get it annulled.
No,
oh, well, what? No, they were supposed to get it annulled.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this we kind of come to a conclusion rather abruptly after that point, because obviously after the marriage, they have to go to the same apartment where they stay and be together, sort of. And, I mean, it is their apartment, for you know, so
to speak.
Yeah, and fair enough. And then we have the thorn in the side of the relationship that's perfectly going to be fine now that they're married. And that's the fiancé, or, you know, I guess ex-fiancé now, Haversack, is going to sit in the corridor and wait. Just, you know, fair enough. You don't want hanky-panky going on, but, you know.
This was the end, and I didn't understand what conclusion we had come to. And Cary Grant, like, stands outside and goes, "Well, I'm going to go home to my wife. Bye."
But at first, I'm going to meddle some more in the most ridiculous way.
Oh, yeah, with the little remote control thing. Oh.
They planted it, though. They put it in the film.
At least they planted the seed for that.
His meddling
not any of the logic for it.
Yeah.
No. Because there's no mechanics in a paper wall, so I don't know how it's just wood and paper, but he's got this magic box that opens it.
So what happens is Cary Grant leaves, and, you know, he has to consummate the marriage that he's forced to happen.
Well, he doesn't have to, but Steve has to.
That's what I mean. He has to force this to happen. And what he's done is he's somehow created a paper wall, like made the wall in the Japanese house somehow respond to the remote control he has for a door in a Japanese man's office.
Only way I can sort of rationalize it is that when he was in the house alone, He installed the equipment necessary to do that just later on the presumption that he would need to open that doorway at the correct time.
Yeah. Oh. But also, couldn't they have just moved the wall open? If they really wanted to, they could have just opened the wall. They obviously weren't that interested. Plus, Steve's going to be tired.
Yeah, he must be knackered.
All that walking.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, and what's weird is Cary Grant staring at them through the windows and they don't seem to notice him just out there looking at them.
But then he gets in his car and like leaves basically back to, I can't remember if he lives in the UK or America, wherever his wife is. And then the end comes up. Like, that's it. What happens with Haversack? Like,
that's the problem.
Like, is Steve going to sleep with her and then wake up in the morning and think, oh, now we've got all this mess to sort out, and then they have a fight and he murders him?
Like, no. What I surmise happens is they sleep together, Haversack's obviously going to find out, and if not, they're going to have to break it to him that they're not getting divorced and that, you know, they actually are in love somehow, and Haversack will be in denial. And then he'll realise that he's been manipulated, and because he works in the embassy, he can probably, like, have her deported, and then Steve has to leave anyway. And then, like, he'll deport her back to the UK, and you know, they can't really be together in America or the UK. One of them's going to have to move. They'll move in. They won't get on. They can't live together for a long period of time. They barely knew each other. Now that Cary Grant isn't there to manipulate their lives, they break up and they get divorced. And Haversack could have, you know, been fine all along.
Yeah.
That's what I surmise. Anyone got any other suggestions?
The apartment blows up and they all die.
Yeah, the mechanism sparks that you illegally implanted in the door and just burns the place down.
Because everything's made of paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was Walk, Don't Run. what would we say in our final thoughts about it then, guys? Abby, what final thoughts? I'm trying to think of a rating system. Has anyone got...
I say, like, what Olympic event? If anyone knows them well enough.
Dressage, complete nonsense and rubbish that shouldn't be a thing, but it is. That's mine right there. Abby, what's your final thoughts? Have a little think about an Olympic sport that sums it up as well.
On paper, this could have worked.
It did work in an earlier film.
Yeah.
Is it the original? I don't think so.
No.
But somewhere along the line, everything went terribly wrong. Consequently, I'm going to say that this is the javelin when it goes wide or long or whatever and accidentally hits a referee.
Yeah.
No, because that's entertaining. I mean, come on. If you saw someone impaled at the Olympics.
Yeah, but it was your mum, Jamie. Is it entertaining now?
How did you know?
It's a big news story.
How did you know that's how I lost her?
Oh. No, it's someone getting hideously injured with a javelin is what you're saying, Abby.
Yeah.
Okay. And what?
Ironic, or rather, it's also tragic because it would have got the world record if that hadn't have happened.
It's a really good throw, but it did impale someone, so we're gonna have to. The referee who could have made the decision is now dead, and Okay, is that your final thought?
Yeah, could have worked, didn't. Quite simple.
Jamie?
The film was like, someone had a really good idea, like, initially, and, like, got all enthusiastic about it and started writing a script and was, like, fitting it all together and trying to make sure everything worked and flowed properly, and then, like, started to lose steam. And, like, it all started to kind of, like, not fit together. And they were like, oh, I don't know how to fit the story together properly. And then, like, finished it and then just submitted the first draft where nothing had been, like, gone back. They hadn't gone back and fixed anything. The only, like, Enigma code that was ever in there was the little box opening the, you know, the doors. That was the only thing that remained. Everything else was just, like, a mess of ideas. Yeah. There was no...
Observations was from their family life.
Yeah, nobody had, like, any motivation. It was just, like, a bunch of stuff happens. And then it wasn't tied together in any kind of logical way. Yeah, there was a potentially good idea in there, and there's no bad performances. Steve's a little bit bland, but
they're all Cary fine. Grant, I liked them mostly, and Cary Grant's the best, I'd say.
I liked Steve at the start when he was introduced, and he was a bit cocky, and he was a bit like, "Oh, I'm a spy," and all this stuff. Even though
that was kind of funny.
But he lost that. He became wetter as the story went on. Yeah, he got kind of limp and rubbish. But everyone was pretty good, and Cary Grant was fun to watch. Samantha Egger was good. The guy who played Haversack was good.
George Takei rocked up and pretended to be Japanese.
Yeah.
Reasonable police officer. Good job.
And the writers and the director just weren't concentrating. Like, they couldn't be bothered.
Yeah. Good casting of the little kids, though. You've got to give it to the little kids. They were so cute. Yeah.
An Olympic event, I would say, is curling.
Curling?
Yeah. I know it's Winter Olympics, is it? I think. Whatever, it's Olympic. And I think
you could have summer curling. Floating them on a lake, or something.
You see it initially, and it's quite interesting, because it's just a bit weird and a bit funny.
Some people brushing some ice to throw stone.
And you're looking at it and you're thinking, well, these people are clearly pros. You know, I don't know what they're doing, but they're doing it well. And then after maybe 3 minutes, you're just sat there thinking, why am I watching this? And then you turn it off. And that's basically, that's what this is.
Sure. What about you, Anthony?
I'm not as offended by the film as, say, Jamie probably is.
I was offended. I was let down.
Okay.
Not angry, I'm just disappointed.
Oh, that's the worst.
I think, the major failing of the film, other than, say, the writing and the comedy...
And the tagline.
Is just there is... there's just no chemistry between the main couple.
No.
And... It's awful because they each have their own chemistry with Cary Grant.
Yeah.
But they just don't have it with each other. And I just do not buy that relationship at all.
That's why it has to be forced so much by Cary Grant.
I would have been much happier with the film if Steve and Rutland had got together at the end.
Yeah, or if just Rutland had actually committed to having homosexual affairs with people, it would become so much more spicy, especially for the time period.
I didn't hate it overall. I thought it was pretty inoffensive. I don't have an Olympic event to compare it to, but I do have an Olympic. You'll see. It's you're waiting for the final of the men's 100 meters. Because that's what you really want to see. You know that's going to be good. But you have to, sit through the whole day of cutting back and forth the things that you don't want to see with people that you don't know or care about. And you're just waiting for, that one event to come up. And, that one event in this film is, Cary Grant. Because he's going to be worth, waiting for. But, he's not enough... To sustain the whole 2 hours waiting for your event to come up.
It's like having the Olympics on in the background and doing other things around the house and not really paying attention until what you want comes on.
Yeah.
And then that gets rained off.
Yeah, I guess.
So, yeah. It's a major dent in Cary Grant's repertoire.
It's a shame because his swan song is his bowing out film.
Because he does a decent job, we've all been saying, but
yeah.
I don't buy it. I just don't buy the film.
Sure. If I were to say anything, it's that it mainly, like you mentioned, Jamie, it doesn't have any motivation for why the things happen, and it doesn't sell enough the idea that we want the couple to break up and then Steve get together with her instead, and a lot of the time. There's perfectly reasonable jokes in it. A few of the jokes are a little bit meh, but mostly it's kind of okay. Some bits better than others, but it falls apart just because it's so silly and stupid towards the end than the first half. And it just what sense does that remote control thing make? And why do you care? Why do you care, Cary Grant? What is in this for you? You don't gain anything apart from the meddling.
The film ends with him having achieved nothing.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he doesn't get any benefit from going back to the UK, knowing that, I don't know, two random people now are married because of him. It's so weird. And
I
like,
think what could have saved this, maybe, is if at the start he'd made a wager with someone.
Yeah, like a really devious wager.
Yeah,
and then everything else would have been fine.
Yeah, well, probably it would have been. It would have at least given some reason
in a different way.
Yeah, so if it, like I said, it's dressage, because that dressage is the weirdest sport, I think, in the Olympics, where you just, like, pony dancing or whatever it is, and it just, what? It makes no sense, and this film makes no sense, and it's peculiar and shouldn't have happened, and yet there it is. Officially there's a film, and dressage is officially part of the Olympics, and
there's plenty of people who like the film, too. You know, it's got 6.5 on IMDb, so people are voting it up, and plenty of people like dressage.
Yeah, you know, weird. So, you know, and the tagline was, run, don't walk, down to walk, don't run, or something. And that's terrible advice. Surely you can walk down to walk, don't run, because it's on at the same time in the cinema. It's not going to be on any faster if you run to the cinema. Just time your trip to the cinema correctly and walk, don't run, down to walk, don't run. Not run, don't walk. That's just wrong. And confusing.
Wow. Or just don't go.
Don't walk to walk, don't run. Don't run to walk, don't run. Don't go to walk, don't run. Get the runs instead. It's more fun. More fun than walk, don't run. Get the runs. Then walk to the chemist. Don't run. You'll get more runs.
Oh, God.
But anyway, guys, that was Walk, Don't Run, starring Cary Grant. And wait, I don't need to cover who's in it. We just talked about it for ages. So that's goodbye, I reckon. What do you guys reckon?
I reckon goodbye, too.
Bye. Goodbye as well.
Bye. Goodbye.